We'd like to welcome everyone to the Regional Growth Council meeting being held at the Westchester Regional Council. Today is January 18th. The time is 9:34. I'd like to go around the room and have everyone introduce themselves. We have new members, I'm sure. In fact, I recognize some of them. So we'll start there and we'll go around and I'll introduce myself as we get here. Because we have some new members, if you can just take a minute and maybe tell us something about yourself too and make sure you know who you're representing. So,
Mike Dealey, I'm the mayor of Syracuse City, and I've probably been peed on, thrown up on, and bit more than anybody else in this room. Because I'm a retired dentist.
Okay.
You might ask, how was I peed on? That's a story. We'll do that.
I'm Katie Witt, mayor of Kaysville. I recently, moved here to Utah about 4 years ago and served on a city council in Colorado. So.
And I'm Katie Gerard, Wasatch Front staff, and I assist with the Regional Growth Committee.
Mark Allen, mayor of Washington Terrace.
Norm Searle, mayor of Riverdale City.
Jeff Scott, Box Elder County Commission.
My name is Sharon Hari. I'm the Urban Design Director for South Salt Lake. I'm here representing Cherie Wood, the mayor of South Salt Lake.
Reed Ewing, the University of Utah.
I'm Andrew Gruber. I'm the Executive Director here at Wasatch Front Regional Council. And thanks to everybody for joining us today, particularly the new members. It's great to see you here.
Len Harvey, I'm the mayor of North Salt Lake, and I'm chairing the meeting today. Normally I don't. Mayor McAdams usually is the chair of this meeting. He's been called to the Capitol to discuss
homelessness,
which is an issue that's important to all of us, but I know he's been very involved in that, so we'll excuse him.
Good morning, Ted Knowlton. I'm the deputy director here at Wasatch Front Regional Council, and I am the staff lead with the Regional Growth Committee, so please don't hesitate to reach out to me.
I'm Tina Cannon. I am a council member in Morgan County.
Good morning. I'm Ivan Marrera. I'm with the Federal Highway Administration, and I'm the Division Administrator.
Dayton Caldwell, City Council.
Charles Henderson, UTA Board Trustee, Chair of the Planning and Long-Term Vision Committee.
Bill Summercorn, Director of Regional Planning and Transportation for Salt Lake County, and the representative for the Utah Association of Counties.
Brent Marshall, Mayor of Grantsville City. Mayor, I just want to invite you and tell you we appreciate it, but nobody's going to try to top your story.
That's for sure. I'm Wade Bittner, Commissioner in Tooele County.
Ron Bigelow, Mayor of West Valley.
I'm Jeff Harris. I'm the Planning Director for the Utah Department of Transportation.
Gary Uress, City Administrator of Woods Cross City, representing the Utah League of Cities and Towns.
Bob Dandoy, I'm the mayor of Royce City. A little bit about my background, I retired from Hill Air Force Base as a civil servant. We ran the maintenance operations at Hill, so I have at least a little background in terms of federal service, and I have found it interesting that there seems to be no correlation between federal government and local government. What we do in federal government is significantly different than I found it in federal government. So. It's an interesting
track.
Thank you.
Laura, we missed you.
Sorry. Laura Hansen, I'm the Director of Planning at Utah Transit Authority.
And maybe we can get this side of the room and then we'll go to that side of the room.
Sure. Lenny Stavenport, Government Relations Manager for Wasatch Front Regional Council.
Jory Johnner, Long Range Plan Group Manager, Wasatch Front.
Megan Townsend, WFRC staff.
Sorry, WFRC staff.
Amy, you just walked in.
Amy Winder Newton, Salt Lake County Council.
Okay. Then over here.
Heather McLaughlin Cole, WRC staff.
Diego Carroll, WSB, supporting the Mountain View Corridor Project.
Helen Peters, Transportation Program Manager in Regional Planning and Transportation.
Jake Young, Salt Lake County Planner.
Carlton Christensen, Salt Lake County.
Christopher Chestnut, Long Range Planning Manager.
Russell Weeks, Salt Lake City Council staff.
Salt Lake Council, Scott Feston, Council Staff.
I'm Ned Hacker with the WFRC staff. I'm Director of Operations.
Hal Johnson with Utah Transit Authority.
Allie Newman with WFRC staff.
Roger Bortnick, Utah for Better Transportation.
Will Wright from Plenty City.
Steve Call, Federal Highway Administration.
Do we have some people on the phone? Is there anyone on the phone? Okay. I guess that's everybody. Did we miss anyone? Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you for coming. The first item on the agenda is going to be approval of the minutes. Have those been read? Is there a motion to approve those?
Motion to approve.
Second.
You have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The next item on the agenda is to provide an opportunity for public comment to address the council. Is there anyone that would like to address us? Please come forward, give us your name and address, and we'd like to hold comments to 3 minutes or less. Okay. There being no public comment, we'll go ahead and move forward. The next item on the agenda, Andrew, did you have anything you wanted to talk about for the chair report? Mayor McAdams has been
I know that Mayor McAdams wanted to share with you, and he does apologize for not being able to be here. To use his exact words, he was summoned by the Speaker and the Lieutenant Governor, and so we understand his absence. One thing that I know that he wanted to mention, and I'll talk about this a little bit, and if Carlton, who works with the mayor, wants to fill in here, we welcome that. In your packets, you have information about the big event coming up on Tuesday at the Salt Palace, the joint Wasatch Choice 2050 and Mayor's Metro Solutions event. This is going to be a great day looking at the big challenges that our region faces and the ways that local communities can help tackle those challenges. Transportation, housing, economic development. The keynote speakers are two gentlemen from the Brookings Institution talking about how cities can thrive in the age of populism. The agenda is here. One of the things that's important for this committee, you know that this committee is the one that shepherds the development of our long-range plans and visions for the region. We call that the Wasatch Choice 2050. I think we'll be talking about that a little bit more in the meeting. And we're going to then, at the meeting, be releasing for the first time that draft Wasatch Choice 2050 vision, which reflects a lot of the engagement you've had and contributions you've made, and then starting a public comment period all over the region. So the flyer and the agenda are there. If you haven't registered already, please do, and the information is on here. And if you have any questions about the details, Katie can help you out. Carlton, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I would just add two pieces. First of all, after the lunch keynote session, we have three breakout sessions that have some great content in it. We also have Reed Ewing from the university and his colleagues presenting some very interesting information at the beginning. And especially for staff that are looking for continuation credit, this is an opportunity for a very nominal amount of money, but with some good material. And then just to throw in the kicker, for the first 400 that register that day, we have a free copy of the book that the keynote speakers have just written and just came out this last month. So.
I apologize, Reed, for neglecting to mention that the university is one of the leads on this event as well. So thank you very much. Also, I also realized that I mentioned your packets, which Katie just texted me to remind me that we have a new approach with our committees, and that is we are trying not to kill too many trees and hand out a lot of paper. So all of the information is that in your packets is being sent out ahead of time to you online. I see several of you have your computers or devices open. If anybody around the table does want a hard copy packet, we have some available that we can hand out now, correct? Mm-hmm. So raise your hand if you want a hard copy packet. So, 1, 2, okay.
Is that it?
Thank you very much.
So with that, we'll go ahead and move forward. And the next item on the agenda, I believe, is a discussion of the 2050 draft vision. Ted, I'm going to just turn the time over to you, and you can lead that discussion tomorrow.
Okay, thank you, Mayor.
So I want to provide an update on where we are at in the Wasatch Choice 2050 process. I know that there's a number of new members here, so I encourage you, if you have questions as we go through this, please don't hesitate. But before I provide that intro, just a little bit of context here. We are growing so rapidly. I know everybody knows this, but when you look at the amount of growth, it's pretty substantial. Gardner Policy Institute anticipates that we're going to add in the greater Wasatch Front the equivalent of a city the size of Bountiful or Draper every year, about 45,000 people. That is a lot of growth. And the interesting thing, and you know this as well, is the context that it's taking place in within our constrained geography, mountains and lakes. But I want to put a finer point on that. Here is a map that shows you pieces of buildable land that are 10 acres or larger. And we don't have data for this ready just yet for Box Elder, Tooele, and Morgan County. And so I want to note that. But if you take a look at Weber County, Davis, Salt Lake County, and Utah County east of the lake, you essentially see that we're almost out of vacant land. And that's part of the context that you're seeing in your community. And then part of the question looking ahead in a planning context is, what does that mean? Does that mean we're going to see a lot more development pressures outside of those valleys? Does it mean that we start to see even more infill and redevelopment kinds of pressures in those valleys? We think that in approximately 15 years, all major pieces of vacant land between Ogden and Provo will be under development, all major pieces. This is what we project looking ahead, just based on the plans that are in place today. Your plans, the existing transportation plan, is that today people spend about an hour getting around by car. And that if you look out to 2050, they might spend about 42 minutes longer, very roughly a doubling of the amount of time they spend traveling in their car. So we have some real challenges. Growth, growth that might look very different because of the change, because we're running out of vacant land, and a lot of transportation challenges. And so the basic notion of Wasatch Choice 2050 is, let's work together and coordinate to address proactively those challenges. That's the basic idea. And the concept is that involves those that address development patterns, which includes local governments and the development community, those that address infrastructure, which includes UDOT and UTA, Wasatch Front Regional Council, all of whom represent you, and that we ask ourselves, how can we coordinate those plans so that we maximize the quality of life and the performance of our region over time? Now, if you think about it, an infrastructure decision is a decision that you make based on decades of growth and what makes sense over a long time frame. And so this is whereas your zoning and planning decisions often are more like a 10-year kind of time frame. That's part of the reason why in the Wasatch Choice 2050 we ask you to the question of, what do you think you want to have happen to your community as it grows over a longer time frame, and do that as you reflect on transportation infrastructure ideas. That's the idea of Wasatch Choice 2050. I'm going to pause for a second if you have a question about that, just basic overview. Here is where we are at. In the last couple of years, we've explored ideas with you and your staff. What kind of growth patterns would you want to explore in your community? How do they fit with transportation ideas that we all have together? We package those into scenarios or stories of how that might unfold over a few decades out to the year 2050. And now we're at the point where we have a draft vision. One scenario that brings together the ideas that you all have developed, again, both for how change happens on land development and infrastructure, and that's what's going to be coming forward and presented for feedback and refinement over the next few months. I'm just going to give you a very quick update on that, and then next year we move into working out the details of how the regional plans address the vision that we all developed together. So the draft elements, we're obviously not going to be able to look through these in detail today. I just want to introduce them, but I want to note that they came from you, from your communities, from the collaborative process, from the transportation partners working together, but it's absolutely a draft. But you will, as you start to learn more about the details of this draft vision, see these elements, centers, often mixed use, more intense places you can see kind of the fabric of these centers here in pink. Growth centers, job areas, significant areas of industrial or office development in addition. Open space, new ideas for open space. Major roads that might be developed or modified over the coming decades. Major transit investments. And a regional bicycling network. And so these are the six components of the Wasatch Choice 2050. When you provide feedback, look at this, dig in, explore it as a community, you won't be looking at this big geography. You'll dig into a little piece and there will be a lot more detail. And so it's going to be an opportunity for you to really think, what is the future of my community? How does it fit into the future of the vicinity that I'm within?
Ted, let me just interject for 1 second. Most of you know that for Morgan County and Tooele County, we are working with the counties specifically, and it's a slightly different approach on what we call RPOs, Rural Planning Organization. So it's a slightly different approach here, but we are helping those counties in thinking through these ideas as well. It's a related but slightly distinct approach.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to also mention that when we talk about the vision workshops. Okay. So I'm going to touch base on Morgan and Tooele as well in that context. I want to just tell you, as you Those all came from you as we reflected upon, well, what are the major themes that are being explored across the region? There's four of them that I want to introduce. One, that taken together, that draft vision provides transportation choices, it supports housing options, preserves open space, and ultimately links development and transportation decisions together. This also gives you a sense of how this draft performs. So today, 21% of our population has access to public transportation and 40% to bicycling infrastructure. This would be the vision in 2050 that we're, again, I think the staff hates it when I use the phrase approximately doubling. But it's so nice and tidy. So this is an approximately doubling of the number of people that have those kinds of opportunities or choices. Remember that 42 extra minutes in your car? Well, what does this do if we coordinate our plans together? What would it mean? We go from instead of 42 extra minutes and we go down to 21 extra minutes. Adorably, that's half. So, staying with the theme, doubling, halving. So we save half of the increase in time spent in our cars based on our models. Housing options, this is an interesting look, but we're on the path to approximately have 75% of our housing units single family. The vision, contemplates instead a single family mix of 60%. This is not how much the land area of housing, it's the number of units. The land area that is multifamily, 40%, would be much smaller in land. And I can talk about that.
That's a pretty substantial difference between the current path and the draft vision for us all to think about and reflect upon. What does it mean in your community? And again, invite you to dig in to those details over the coming months. That's a 15% shift. A key strategy of preserving open space, that's something that to get feedback on over the coming months. That basically means 27,400 acres saved, partly as a function of that change in intensification, partly as a function of more development through infill and redevelopment. But that's a pretty big shift between our current path and the draft vision as well. And then the fourth key strategy, link development and transportation decisions. And here, a good way to kind of think about, well, how does that sum up? What are the big benefits of tying our development patterns to transportation decisions? And part of it is answered by this question of where or how much can I get to soon? If you compare the path that we have been on and the draft vision, our models project that an average household can get to 57% more jobs through the draft vision. Okay, or an average household can reach 166,000 more jobs. Well, what does that mean? That means you might be able to find a better job and move jobs more easily. It means you might have more educational opportunities. It means you might have a wider variety of shopping opportunities and those kinds of things.
Ted, real quickly.
Yeah.
Is that relative to the base year?
That's a comparison of two future years.
Thank you.
2050 under our current path and 2050 under the draft vision. Good clarification. This is related to a concept that we explored as a committee a lot last year that we referred to as access to opportunity. And I wanted to just mention that a little bit because it's a fairly new concept. But if you think of it, you might ask yourself, if a business wants to locate where it can maximize the number of patrons that can come shop there or workers that can work there, they're going to find a spot that might maximize that access, the number of homes within a certain amount of time. And we can improve that through transportation improvements, faster improvements, less congestion, more options, public transportation. We can also affect that through land development. It might be jobs or homes that are nearer to high-speed transportation as they are in this case. But at the end of the, or it could be where we locate jobs. At the end of the day, this concept of how do we improve the ability to reach more things in less time, that's a combined function of both how we grow and infrastructure. It brings them together. It's a great summary measure of how well we are doing in linking development patterns and infrastructure. Any questions about the access to opportunity piece? I'll just say one other thing about this, that we as a staff working with UDOT and Mountain Land Association of Governments have been digging into how would we use access to opportunity to inform more of our decisions, and we're going to come back to you with some case studies of how this might be used over the next couple of meetings. So again, those are the four key strategies that sort of embody the things that we've explored together through the process of developing the draft preferred scenario: provide transportation choices, support housing options, preserve open space, and link development and transportation decisions. And then here is where we are going. This is a draft subject to refinement, and how do you get involved in refining that? I'm just going to mention a few basic things. One is the event that Carlton and Andrew talked about. That's the kickoff, and then there's a series of vision workshops over the coming couple of months. This is in your packet. And so this shows you which groups of communities are meeting and when. And then we're having conversations with Morgan and Tooele County about the way they want to be involved with UDOT as well in the Wasatch Choice 2050 process. I just wanted to note for both of those areas that they both, you know, have just completed general plan updates for those areas, which also is a longer range looking look at development and open space and infrastructure. The vision workshops are an opportunity. This is a fundamental question. The fundamental question is, what do you want to do with your community looking out to a time horizon that extends beyond your current plan? And because that's an important and fundamental question, we're asking if you would please have your city council members come, your planning commission members come, mayors come, key staff come, and that it's an opportunity to really reflect on those things. This is the feedback that's going to be sought in particular. You're not going to be making a hard commitment to anything. We're just trying to say, hey, did we hear you right? We've gathered your input over the course of the past couple of years, but it's a time to reflect on it and say, is this where you want to go? Do you want to refine it? And so we'll ask questions like, for the new land use concepts, tell us where your level of interest is. After reflecting on it again, you don't have any interest, you want to explore it, or you've already moved beyond exploring it, that kind of thing. And then go ahead and modify the shape and classification of a land use concept. Land use and transportation, feedback on road transit and active transportation projects, issues, concerns, suggested modifications, and we'll ask you to think about how these two things fit together. So that's what will happen in a nutshell in these vision workshops. We're also going to launch, at the time of the big event on the 23rd, an interactive feedback tool that you can use. Those are the major opportunities for public and stakeholder input over the next couple of months. We'll also do, I think, a public open house as well. But I'm going to pause on this and see if you have any comments on the input opportunities that are coming up on the draft vision or any questions about the draft vision. I only have one slide left. Okay, and ultimately, as we look ahead, what the Wasatch Choice 2050 does is it moves forward in your local land use plans. We have a program to help you, the Transportation and Land Use Connection, but that's your purview. Transportation is embodied in Utah's Unified Transportation Plan, and economic development is embodied in another plan that we produce at Wasatch Front Regional Council called the Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy. So this is a vision that ultimately moves forward by each of us in our own sphere, carrying the baton and implementing it. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I'll open it up to any questions that you might have.
Yeah, Jay, could you remind us of the goals of the 2050 vision?
Yeah, thank you for the question, Reed. So we have this giant oversized poster
that you still
for
can't
your viewing pleasure. were you shouting I can't read it?
Yeah.
Maybe we still need to work on that. But these are the 10 goals, and I don't know if I should do my best James Earl Jones dramatic reading of the goals, but those are the 10 goals, and you can kind of see them listed across there. We dug into the access to economic and educational opportunities, but you can see those up there, and I'm happy to elaborate on those if that's helpful.
And that is a reminder, those goals went through this committee, and then we ultimately went to the full council for adoption along with our other partners in year one of the four-year process leading to the ultimate adoption of the Wasatch Choice 2050 vision. So thanks for the softball.
Well, now a follow-up really quickly. So one of the, for the new members, we have amendments to the regional transportation plan come up quite frequently, and I am one, and so we're kind of voting blindly for or against. I'm wondering if we could, as you present these amendments, the new roads and it's mostly new roads or road improvements, if you could tell us how they stack up against those 10. That's I know that's a difficult thing to ask, but it would make it so much easier for us to make informed decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and let me say one thing, that's been a topic that Regional Growth Committee has explored over the last few meetings, is how can staff provide the information that you need in order to make those kinds of decisions. And so we've been talking about adding more data as well, and Jory can elaborate on that.
I would just add for the new members, most of the amendments are not new projects to the RTP. They're actually moving phases or changing the scope. And so they are part of the RTP, and they were developed under the guise of Wasatch Choice for 2040. So in essence, they do support Wasatch Choice for 2040.
And Jeff and I have a good time at these meetings. It's like this.
It's actually not true. Reed and I work very hard together. We fund a lot of his research. I help support his planning group. I think at the end of the day, we do agree quite a bit.
Yes,
it's the means to the end that, and what's practical and real. I'm not saying that it isn't, but how we get there.
Thank you. Costs and dollars in these plans, I mean, how is that taken into account? I can't remember any slides talking about that.
Yeah, at this, so the vision is financially unconstrained. So what we're doing at this point is we're looking at the needs for road transit, active transportation. We do have a number associated with that that is subject to refinement. And what we're going to do is we're going to lock down the vision based on feedback and where we all want to go together, and then we'll say, you know, what's a realistic projection financially, and then start to constrain it into that. And then there's the process of putting that into phases. This word phases is basically means buckets of priorities. The first priority, the second priority, the third priority.
And I may be making an erroneous assumption, but I'm assuming that if we have smart planning, we'll save dollars as well.
Yes, and we're tantalizingly close to having a number of looking at how much infrastructure cost savings we've got. But you remember that slide that we saved 27,000 and some odd acres of development? That also represents a significant cost savings on local infrastructure as well.
Thank you.
Mark Daly has a question.
Mark Daly?
I'm looking at the community that I represent, and I'm looking at communities around us like Hayesville and other parts of North Adams County, and looking at the number of children that are coming into those better communities. Those children grow up and attend universities. Davis County has a satellite of Weber State, but who is looking at the potential for additional higher education in, for example, in Davis County? Is any of the, are any of these committees looking at that?
Do you want to answer that, or do you want me to?
Go ahead.
So, WFRC as an organization does not have responsibility or jurisdiction over planning for educational facilities. However, the way that we weave that into our work is that as we go through this, all the process of looking at various scenarios for growth and then coming up with the vision, preferred scenario or vision for growth, we're talking with all the major stakeholders. So major landowners, business groups, community organizations, and educational institutions about what their anticipation is of when and where new facilities would be needed. I will note, Mayor, that you're raising an issue that there is, the school districts are actually not required to provide information about their facility siting in the way that would be most helpful for us in planning our work. And I think maybe some of you are aware of and have dealt with this issue. The process of siting schools is done in a little bit of a black box. And so it's a bit of a challenge that we face in doing our planning, but it's something we try to get input from all major stakeholders landowners or others as we put these together.
I was speaking more of higher education than public education.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're talking about that travel time.
Yeah.
With the density increasing there, that somebody traveling either to Weber County or to Salt Lake to go to university, it's going to be more congested in Salt Lake. It's going to be more congested in Ogden.
Right.
Seems like it would be smart to do something.
Agreed.
Thank you, Mayor. Anything else, Ted?
No.
Let's go ahead and move forward. The next item.
I might add that Utah State University has a branch in Tooele County, and that makes that available. And they are available in many of the other communities in the state. So there are opportunities for higher ed, and they're close by. And we also have a technical college or technical training that's available as well. And so universities, I believe, are looking out for that and anticipating that. And if we could go through and give them a plan, then they would have another method or means or whatever to follow. And they also do a lot of classes on the internet. So that higher ed is highly available.
If possible, a couple of things that you'll need, you may need in order to get what he was talking about in Tooele, the RDA. We had an educational corridor. We established that. We sought Utah State University. The RDA has functions. You know, they can do things. And the RDA, with help of the RDA, the city, the school board, they're there. You can do it. Not necessarily these guys. You can do it.
Yeah, I think you're a little different situation in Tooele than we are, because we have neighbors immediately next to us. You know, we drive through our city in 5 minutes, and then we're with Kaysville, and with, so, you know, somehow we're going to have to dance together.
You get the, seriously, if you get the land designated as an educational corridor, get with the schools, I'm almost certain they would work with you. It's going to cost you.
All right, thank you. Yes.
Can I just make one other comment about Wasatch Trace for 2050 and its overall importance? I would suggest that it's fairly easy for the Wasatch Rec Regional Council and this Regional Growth Committee to agree and say that this growth trajectory is a good one, right, that we want to do this. But it really is local government where that happens. Mm-hmm. And if we don't have a mechanism to actually implement what we're talking about here, then the savings and all the benefits that Ted has outlined will not happen and will continue to develop in the way that we're developing now, which is auto-oriented. And so if we really want to make this happen, to vote approval here is one thing, but it's making it happen in your cities. And that's why UDOT is supporting, you know, Salt Lake County, Wasatch Front Regional Council in the TLC program. We believe that's a mechanism to actually start implementing some of these ideas at the municipal level. It's super critical.
Yeah, and I think it's, if the cities, and something I worry about in West Davis County, we're spending hundreds of millions of dollars on a new freeway out there. If we're still going to continue to say everybody has to live on large lots, it's going to be a problem. I mean, we're going to have large lots from here to Wendover, and we're going to have all kinds of problems. And so communities really are going to have to come to grips with the fact that we're all in this together, and in spite of the fact that you personally might think everybody needs to live on a quarter or a half or a whole acre, that's really not something that our community can sustain.
There's no one size fits all, obviously, and what works for one community may be different than another, and that's where the Transportation and Land Use Connection, the TLC program, comes in, is helping communities think about what is best for us. And that program emerged from this committee, and Councilmember Winter Newton was really helpful in getting Salt Lake County funding for that, and UDOT and UTA, Laura Jeff, have been contributing to that also, and Megan and Alex are our program leads on that. So if you got questions about that, you can talk to them as well.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Ted. The next item on the agenda is the Transportation Governance and Funding Task Force and Legislative Purview. The Transportation Governance and Funding the Funding Task Force was formed by the legislature, I believe.
That's right.
And it actually deals with some of the problems that we're talking about now, how we're going to afford to build this, and some density issues. And Andrew, I'm going to turn the time over to you to let us know what's going on there.
Okay, thank you. And I apologize. I feel like I'm talking more than I should, and that's in part because Mayor McAdams was going to cover some of these items. Mayor Arbery, thank you very much for jumping in. We really appreciate it. I will be brief. The legislative session starts on Monday. So nobody's safe when the legislature is in session. So we all have to be careful. We all also have to be very engaged. And so the staff at WFRC and our partners are all going to be spending a lot of time on the Hill working on the issues that matter to you in this space. Transportation, housing, economic development, growth and development issues. In the transportation space, the core issue has been, as Mayor already noted, the work that has come out of the Transportation Governance and Funding Task Force, which was created by the legislature and is made up of a mix of legislators and business representatives and local elected officials representing the various organizations. Commissioner Scott is a member of the task force representing the Utah Association of Counties. WFRC's representative is Ogden City Mayor Mike Caldwell, and there's a long list of folks that have been involved in that. We are just coming up on the point that we're about to have a draft bill that gets released. I spoke yesterday with Senator Harper, who is one of the co-chairs of the task force, and he said that he anticipates that bill will be available early next week. There's likely to be another meeting, the last meeting of the task force, probably next Thursday morning, although it hasn't been posted yet. We will share information about that when that gets posted, along with an analysis of the draft bill. But here's what we predict is going to happen in the bill, because it is reflective of the recommendations that came out of the task force. First of all, we anticipate no change to the commitment that the state is currently making to investing in infrastructure. The state is putting a lot of money into infrastructure right now, and we anticipate that there's not going to be a proposal to change that this year. However, there is going to be legislation or in the bill that would make those state investments more flexible so that they could be used for the highest value projects regardless of what mode of transportation. So right now, the state is only putting money into state roads and basically into new capacity on the UDOT road system. Now, those investments are needed, but as we also know, and one of the key strategies of Wasatch Choice 2050 is providing transportation choices. So the idea is to make those funds more flexible so they can be used for transit projects or active transportation projects, whatever projects receive the produce that greatest return on investment. And I'm going to look to Jeff to nod here. This is not something that is being proposed as a conflict with UDOT. It is something that UDOT knows is of benefit to the overall functioning of the transportation system. So this is all of us working together.
I would agree 100%.
Thank you.
Wasatch Front Central Corridor Study, we think, proved the case that we've got to stop thinking about mode and projects and start thinking about systems of improvements. And the policy, transit, roadway, active transportation, all of those things, and we're not going to meet our future travel demand needs.
So
pull out transit, yeah. You've got to make up for that travel demand somewhere.
Thank you. So changing the statutory definition of what the state infrastructure funds can be used for, and then directing the Transportation Commission that does the actual programming or allocating, if you will, of those state infrastructure dollars, directing them to modify their prioritization criteria so as not to just look at traditional transportation metrics like road congestion or safety, which are obviously important and should be looked at, but to broaden the look so as to consider land use and development and economic development, consistent with what we've been talking about. So that's a subset of issues that are going to be included in the legislation. Also, there's going to be legislation that would modify the structure of the UTA board. And Charles, I don't know if you want to comment on this, you can or not, up to you. But the idea is that right now there's a 16-member board governing body for the Utah Transit Authority, and that is likely, at least in the draft legislation, to be reduced to a 3-member board of full time, and then some form of advisory capacity for local governments, whether it's another independent body or whether there's the UTA looks to the metropolitan planning organizations like WFRC or our peer at MAG in Utah County to do more of that for the continued voice of local government. So that's another issue that's going to be included in the legislation. Last piece about that, we anticipate authorization for a UDOT to do a road user charge demonstration program to experiment with other ways to charge drivers other than just paying per gallon charges or gas tax charges, to look at distance-based charging. Now that would just be a modest pilot program where people could volunteer to participate in that, to study that technology. That's a basic summary of what we anticipate going to be in this bill. I would just note the legislative session is always fun. It moves really quickly. We will send out to you periodically updates on what's going on. Now, Lanice Davenport, right over here, is WFRC's new government relations manager. So look for information from her about what's going on at the Capitol on all of these issues. And we also have a practice every Thursday. We have meetings at the Capitol in the Senate building, and we provide breakfast vouchers to you. And if anybody wants to jump in and have a dialogue about the issues, you are more than welcome to attend. So we'll send out notice about that as well. Monday, the fun begins.
Okay.
And I don't know, Commissioner, do you want to add anything about the work of the task force as a member?
I think you covered it well. Just in some of the legislative updates that we've had and talking with our counterparts in Northern Utah, there is a pretty strong groundswell against using the other TIF or active transport or for mass transit from the other rural areas. And so it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out in conjunction with oversight, if they do that, for the UTA, the 3-member commission, or if they ended up, there was a push to take it to 5 members. And so like Andrew mentioned, we really have no idea which direction this is going to go or where it's going to end up. But that's been the synopsis so far.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Andrew, can I have one comment about the funding side of it and use the TIF? Right now the department does absolutely fully support the ability to fund transit. But we have to remember, in the financially constrained long-range plan, we have new funding identified for transit and the funding for the roads. So if you take from that fixed pie the money that we have identified for the roadway projects and put it onto transit, it still leaves a hole, mm-hmm. right? So we still need a new funding mechanism for the improvements that have been identified for transit. Just taking it from the TIF pie doesn't necessarily solve that problem.
So in other words, we don't have enough money to do everything we need. Definitely true. The local community, cities and counties, have enough money to do everything that you need.
As long as you give it to us.
That's true.
We're always looking at that as well.
Just a comment. Yes. I appreciate the information. I'm a little naive in terms of the purpose of that, but is there rationale behind why they're proposing making changes? And I share that with you in large part because people have a tendency to resist change, and I can't help but think if they get misinformation, they'll probably contact legislators and try to block what appears to be maybe what they don't know is taking place. You brought up some interesting points. Why move from 3 from 16? there rationale for that decision, or is it just something that just kind of makes sense economically? I'm a little confused. And then who's carrying that banner to the public so that the public understands that this is the best interest of the public, or is it? I guess maybe that's the point, because when it gets some legislation, it has a tendency to create its own life, and who knows where it goes.
Yeah.
Please.
I'm not a commission. He should be the one speaking today.
Do you ever feel like one of the UTA buses run on your back?
Yeah, I'm running.
Kind of the overriding theme that I heard in our meetings down there with the task force was, if there is going to be money coming from the TIF that's going into mass transit, the legislature feels like that is tax dollars that need to be accounted for, and so that they need to have an oversight on that. And so they would like to have that 3-member commission that would have active oversight over the money that's coming from the TIF for mass transit. And so I think that was the impetus behind the proposal. And then, you know, quite frankly, there's been a little bit of this going on with UTA and the legislature over the years about funding, debt, perception, and different things. And so I think some of it is, you know, the TIF going to mass transit, and some of it is just additional oversight that they felt like they needed.
Yeah,
so I will share. And thank you, Commissioner Scott. I've been on the board since 2008, and as Commissioner Scott described or shared, there has been some concerns with respect to the operations of the agency. Many of them that came out of an audit that was performed by the legislative auditor, and we addressed all those concerns. But this point about funds, there needs to be oversight, and we would expect that. We've not had the absence of that with any of the funding that we've received. We've been held accountable for the dollars we receive and making sure that they're accounted for. But there is also some concerns because there are perceptions. And even though we've spent many days and many hours speaking with individuals and addressing those concerns, it still seems to come up. From my perspective as a board member, the discussions have been, you know, one, you know, oversight from a financial standpoint. The other is also concerned with respect to governance and ensuring that there's the accountability that's there. And as board members, we've discussed this numerous times, what the future holds. We will support whatever comes out of the task force. As the chair of the Planning and Long-Term Vision Committee, we continue to go forward with our plans with respect to how the agency should focus and operate with respect to meeting the needs of the Wasatch Front, which we serve. And so we don't believe that will likely change, but how we execute, will those funds come to make that happen? Obviously, there's still being decided. But I know that staff, as well as many of the board members, have spent time on the Hill speaking with. In fact, Brent Milburn is a part of the task force, and he's on the UTA board and has been our spokesperson representing our sentiment. But again, we want to make sure that we're transparent. We want to make sure that we're providing the information that's necessary to be able to make informed decisions about what's the best outcomes with respect to one, moving forward and meeting the needs, as you know, Ted kind of described the need with respect to transit, transportation. How do we make that happen? At the end of the day, as a board member, we want to make sure that we're adding the value where it's necessary. So I don't want to get into, some of the angst that is this apparent with some of the task force members, but where there's opportunity to educate and inform, we will continue to do that. Make sure that at the end of the day, whatever it comes out, of course, it's the best for our constituency.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes, I would just raise a little bit of a caution here as I've listened to the discussion on all of this. Transportation funding and management. Everything I've seen is that because the legislature wants to spend some funds in it, that they will then assume authority for management. The corollary to that is that the role that we play as local elected officials goes down, and we become advisory, not directing. And I think in that discussion, we need to be careful that local officials are not eliminated, because they're providing a significant portion of the funds through votes that they made to fund public transportation. So for those who are on the committee and those discussions, I think we need to make sure that whatever they do, the voice of local representatives are still effective and make a difference. If we end up being advisory, I don't know, just my opinion, that's not much of a say. So I just caution those of you who are in the role to make sure that the voice of your local officials are still heard.
And I think we'll all have a role, and again, it's Thursday morning, is that when you're, so Thursday morning at the legislative meetings, if you want to go to those and be involved in the political process, make sure you're informed. And as elected officials, we do have some sway when we make a phone call. So.
And we're also, we are working very closely with the Utah League of Cities and Towns and the Utah Association of Counties on this. We always do. But to Mayor Bigelow's point, it has been a very consistent theme of our dialogue that local government providing them and authorizing the majority of funding for the UTA must have a strong voice, not merely an advisory role, a strong voice in the governance and the direction of the agency. So that's a principle.
And I know that's happening, but I say to all of you here,
yeah, good.
The rest of us need to weigh in too.
Okay.
Don't rely on just the members of the Wasatch Front Regional Council and the Utah League of Cities and Towns to influence legislators.
Yeah.
Each of you have significant relationships with those legislators in your area. Make sure they're aware of your concerns. It's not just their job, it's our job too.
Thank you.
Thank you. So the next item on the agenda is talking about the Regional Transportation Plan, Amendment Number 5. For those that are new, I think Ted mentioned that we have kind of four buckets, and really I think only one of these funding, which is, you know, phase one. And so I think most of these amendments are moving things between the phases, but I'll turn the time over to Drury and he can explain them.
Thank you very much. As I move through this presentation, I'd open up questions, comments as we go through projects or the process. I'm going to spend a little bit more time talking about our process and why we do amendments, and then go into the projects that we do to answer Reed's question. We do have some details we want to share with you on the projects themselves. But again, new committee, a lot of new faces, asking if you do have questions, please just feel free to interrupt me. We have a little bit of time. I think this is the last item on the agenda, or pretty close. So with that, the RTP is updated every 4 years. So as Ted mentioned, we're currently working on the 2019 to 2050 Regional Transportation Plan and the 2050 Wasatch Choice 2050 Vision. We have a currently adopted Regional Transportation Plan. It was adopted in May of 2015, and it looks out till 2040. As we do amendments, we know things come up. It's not set in stone. Needs have changed over the years. Funding becomes available, things like that. We have to make sure the plan meets a couple considerations as we look to amend it. It has to make sure it meets financial constraints. So we just can't add a bunch of projects to the plan without knowing that we have the amount of revenue needed for it. We have to make sure it meets air quality conformity. That's one thing our office does, is we make sure that the mobile sources, the vehicles, the pollutants from them, it meets the budget set by the state. And then we also have to make sure we go out to a public process and a public comment period, so that we're not doing things kind of behind the scenes in the back smoke-filled room. And we like to do them about once a year, if we can. It doesn't always work out, and this is one of the cases where projects needed to be amended in prior, and so we did an interim amendment to that. I'm going to go through, this is a little bit harder to read, but I'm going to step you through our amendment process. Just so you're familiar with it, if you're talking to other members in your county or yourself, you'll know what to do with that. So if you need an amendment to the plan, you'll submit one. You'll either give myself a call or send Andrew or Ted an email letting us know that you want an amendment. And we like to have a little bit of dialogue before an official request comes, because sometimes amendment isn't always needed. It can be waited until the next plan. For instance, if there's an amendment needed next summer or in the fall next year, we might just say, well, let's look at that as part of the 2019 plan. But there are plenty of cases that it needs to be amended into the current plan. We'll get the amendment, and then it'll fall into one of three categories. Level one is a staff modification, which means that we can do that in-house, and therefore functional classification changes, changes to the active transportation plan, right-of-way constraint, things like that. Level two and level three are almost the same, besides level three requires air quality conformity. So they're projects that are principal arterials or freeways, besides a couple minor arterials. And so we have a list of roads, and if it needs to fall within air quality conformity, we bump it up to a level three. If not, it's a level two for the non-regional significant projects. And all that does is we have to run the air quality conformity model for that to make sure that we're meeting the budgets. After we do that, we take it to the Technical Advisory Committee. And this is a committee made up of your planners. They meet usually a month prior to this meeting. So the next meeting's in February. I encourage you to send your planners to that meeting. And so they'll see the list of projects. We'll have discussions about it. And then they'll make a recommendation to bring that to the Regional Growth Committee to go out to public comment. And so these amendments that I'm bringing to you for Amendment 5, we took them to the Regional Growth Committee in September, or the TAC Committee in September, Regional Growth in October, and then we went out to public comment through October and November on these projects, and now we're bringing them back. And so that's the next part of the process. We went to public comment. We also notify all the county councils of government. And so we'll either go out and make a presentation, or in this case, we weren't able to line up with the Salt Lake County COG, and so we sent out the projects, asked for any comments or clarifications with the county COGs. But we only do that if a project lands within your county. So if no project, then we don't need to go out to the COG meetings for that. We'll review any comments if we get any. Normally we don't, but every once in a while we'll get comments on a project for the amendment. And then we'll decide if the comment warrants a change to the amendment. We have a feedback loop where we'll need to go back out for another comment period before asking to for approval. And so there's a little feedback here if that's needed. If there's no significant comments or no changes made after the public comment period, we bring it back to the Regional Growth Committee. So that's where we're at right now. And then we'll ask for a recommendation for our regional council to approve the amendment, and that would be next Tuesday after the event on the 23rd. So that's our process. Any questions on the overall amendment process? And as we get future amendments, I'll remind you of this process, but probably spend a lot less time in future meetings going over this. But I wanted to spend a little bit extra time kind of walking you through that process. So Reed is lobbing up softballs all day today, it looks like. We have a process to bring you technical considerations. This was an idea that was discussed about a year ago. Last May, Regional Growth Committee had a significant discussion around the table about, well, yeah, you guys are asking us to amend the plan, but not necessarily providing a lot of information that goes with each project. And so staff, we worked with UDOT, UTA, went to the technical advisory committees to get input, and we brought that to the Regional Growth Committee this last fall, technical considerations process, and they match up to the 10 regional goals. So they include safety, manage the reliable conditions, project readiness, does it support Wasatch Choice 2050? So as we look at these projects, I'll be providing some data that goes with those, with each of the goals throughout the process. So we've just recently added this as part of the reporting back. And so we work very closely with the project sponsor. We'll ask them to help provide data. or we'll run in-house data with our travel demand model, or work with UDOT on safety information, things like that from the safety index. So this amendment, there are 9 projects in this amendment, just shy of $200 million worth of projects. Scale-wise, just to give you a little idea, our first phase of our 2015 regional transportation plan has about $3 or $4 billion of projects. So this is a fairly small amount. It's a big number, right? I mean, $200 million, large number, but in the scale of what's in phase one of our last regional transportation plan, it's a pretty small percentage of the total cost.
Hey, Jory, just to make sure there's clear understanding of what you just said.
Okay.
Right, the plan, the regional transportation plan, part of Utah's unified transportation plan, the one that is in place today, goes from 2015 to 2040. It is broken into 3 phases,
yes,
of time. The first phase is roughly the first 10 years. And that is the phase that essentially says, these are projects that are priorities now and need to be done now and for which there is funding to do. And then we work with UDOT and UTA, and UDOT and UTA on those projects, they move forward and actually implement them and allocate specific dollars to specific projects. And so what Jory is saying, the billions of dollars, that is the aggregate amount in our region that is in phase one across the modes of transportation, right? And it includes new projects, new capacity projects, and also maintenance and preservation and operation of the existing systems in the aggregate. And so what we're doing now is making amendments to that overall plan, but things moving in and around from phases into phase one.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
And I'd add, not just UDOT, UTA, but local communities. There's,
yes,
some of the local funding sources, sales taxes, corridor preservation funds, registration fees that require projects to be in the regional transportation plan to be funded. And we'll be bringing, over this next year, we'll be bringing the draft plan, phased plan to this committee, working with your staff, working with UDOT and UTA on that. And so you'll be very familiar between now and next fall of our phasing process, what that's gonna look like.
Because we right now have in place the 2015,
yes,
to 2040,
yeah,
and what Ted was talking about before, Wasatch Choice 2050 is the next version, which will be 2019 to 2050. So we have a plan in place. We periodically modify or amend the existing plan. And then we also are always working on the next version of the plan. And Regional Growth Committee is the shepherding for putting together the next version of the plan and then also amending the current plan. Okay? Okay.
And then the 2023 plan, right?
One more. And I would say, one might ask, why do we change phase after we've developed the plan, right? Why are we taking a project from phase two or phase three and moving it into phase one? And the simple response to that is, it's us, our partners, being nimble and responding to what's actually happening on the ground. A plan is awesome, but a plan is a plan, and when it's built, it's static, and it doesn't account for the new information and the new analysis and the new conditions on the road. So there are times when we absolutely should be nimble and be able to respond to the actual conditions that are out there. And that's really what we're doing.
Well, having said that, I guess the question again, and my naivety is a little naive on this, is there a model by which you govern that decision? Meaning is you provide a series of information into a model and it basically kicks out where the priority requirements are, or is it done by subjective means or more political?
So, I mean, originally, if I may, we do, the WFRC and MAG, they have a travel demand model, and that's one of the primary tools that we use. We take past growths in BMT, we take future projections of population employment, land use assumption, we put that into the travel demand model, we say, here's the growth in travel demand, we apply that to the network, and say, here's the projects that we need. That's one tool. But there are a lot of other tools, we call a micro simulation, we actually go out and do traffic analyses, that is additional information that's added to that. It's impractical to use at a global RTP or unified plan level.
And that's one of our goals, right? Manage the system, there's safety, connections to our centers,
right.
Access to opportunity.
Right.
And Jory is referencing the very large poster.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
as we're making these decisions, both for amending the plan as well as developing a new plan, they should track back to the council adopted goals.
Absolutely. Our entire process of developing the 2015 plan matched the goals of the Wasatch Choice 2040, and the new 2019 plan, as we've done, worked through scenarios and we've worked through project selection and on the vision, when you see that on the visualization map, those projects were selected with the goals in mind. And as we work into phasing, our phasing criteria match up with the goals also. Our entire process lines up very closely with the 10 goals that this committee weighed in on and approved in October of 16.
And when you go through the process, what you'll see, they score all of the projects, and then it goes through the technical advisory committee, and just because you have a high score or maybe a medium score, it's actually people on the ground that are more hopefully technical, looking at the projects and making recommendations than political. At least that's just what I've seen. And that's the attempt. And so you try and get some real world eyes on it. And as cities, if you really want a project and you have the funding to do it, you still can't necessarily do it unless it's in phase one. And so, I mean, if you really want to do it, you still need to get it in phase one and get it through an amendment, even though you're willing to pay all of the funds for it. So, I mean, there are a bunch of things that are happening, so.
No, I appreciate that, because there is a technical process, and we do score all the projects, and it's a really detailed effort, but we will bring it out to the local communities, work with UDOT and UTA to kind of review it, because that's one part of it. There's local needs, as the mayor's mentioning there, that may not come out in the scoring of the project, and so there is the ability and flexibility to react to other needs outside of our scoring process. It's not black and white where, you know, the top one third of the projects are in the first phase, the next two thirds. So,
and the reason for my point is that typically the elected officials are on the front line of a population that is complaining. And as much as I would like to think that the UDOT is in fact getting some feedback from the population, I suspect there is some, but nothing to the extent by which the politically elected people get and say, as a population, you got to fix these traffic issues, you got to solve that, to the point that we can within the cities that are cities where we own the roads, we work that. But in many of our cities, those are state roads, and therefore there's a different process, and I think we just need to understand how that process works so we can at least answer to our constituents that it's in process or being looked at. Otherwise, what do you tell them? And I surely am not going to be a person that's going to mislead them. And so the point is that there needs to be an answer, and I think we have an obligation to provide an answer, however that's formed. So maybe better understanding of how the process works will make it easier for the elected officials to simply be able to respond to their colleagues.
Okay. We don't get it directly from the public, but we do get the pressure from the elected officials.
That's my point. Right.
And Andrew and his staff will come out and meet with mayors and discuss these issues. We have the small area meetings where you can provide your input, but a lot of it is driven by the technical advisory commission and that's your planning people going and meeting with other planning people in the county trying to make decisions.
All right, so the 9 projects that we have in this amendment, this is just a high-level overview. 3 projects up in Weber County, they need to be in the regional transportation plan to get the Weber County third quarter cent sales tax. So there's 3 small projects up there. There's a couple unknown funding sources for UDOT, UTA, with the 5600 West, I'll cover that, and then a project on 7200 West in Salt Lake County that will go out for study, coordinated by or led by the Salt Lake County. 2 projects that will tie to the new prison just out west here. We didn't anticipate and didn't know where the prison was going to be located when we developed the 2015 plan, so this is, now we know where it is. There's going to be a couple of roads going into that, and we need to make sure that those higher capacity roads are in our regional transportation plan. There's 1 project that is seeking our surface transportation program funds, Wasatch Boulevard, and then there's a UDOT project that's a phasing change that Jeff mentioned, that's a smaller costed project there. It's a restriping project, really.
And we'll talk about that. So, there we go. Great. First project is 1100 North here in Harrisville City. Very short project. It's probably less than a tenth of a mile. This project normally wouldn't be in our regional transportation plan, but again, the Weber County third quarter requires, the legislation requires that this project be in the regional transportation plan, and it's a really good project. We like network connectivity. This actually, you have Highway 89 here and Washington Boulevard. This helps provide another east-west connection. It's new construction of that project at a very small cost. Again, it's a $400,000, I believe, for the right-of-way and the project. So here are the technical considerations that for a level two project. So you remember in our process, we have a level two and a level three. We have technical considerations for level two projects, and we've selected that these five are the ones that are really four, no air quality required for level two projects. So there's four considerations for level two, and then there's a handful more for level three, since they're the larger regional type projects. So this is about a 4 out of 10 on the safety index, which is on the low end. That's fatalities and serious injuries. Vehicle hours, travel and or connectivity, 106 hours added to the newer road, but that's not really that high when you look regionally. And it links Highway 89 to Washington, so it addresses the connectivity there. Project readiness, they've started to preserve the corridor. They just need to purchase it. The development around it's been preserved, and they've been working with the developers on that, and they've done some preliminary engineering. And there aren't any Wasatch Choice 2050 centers there. So that gives you kind of an idea of the things we looked at on these technical considerations. And again, no air quality needed because it's a level two. Next project up in Plain City, 3600 West. This is an operational project. What they want to do is do shoulders, curb gutter, sidewalk on this project, connecting 2600 North to 1975 North. Very low safety index. It's out in the west side. Really doesn't do much on vehicle hours of travel, 3 hours per day. But it connects two minor east-west arterials, and it completes the street. Again, a lot of the smaller roads out in the west part of Davis and Weber and Salt Lake don't have shoulders, sidewalk, curb gutter, and a lot of this project would add that, kind of completes the street. They've done corridor preservation, so they don't have to do much there. No Wasatch Choice 2050 centers in that area either. Depot Drive, Weber County. This connects from 12th Street down to the new, it's a new road connecting to the Sheriff Department here, Sheriff's Correction Facility. Again, normally a project we wouldn't include in our plan because it's a really short project, but the funding source needs it to be. And we've worked very closely with Weber County on these projects to make sure that they're supportive of them. Small 1.5 out of 10 for the safety index. It's not in our travel demand model, so we weren't able to provide the vehicle hours of travel. But it does provide a connection to the employment center. They're actually have the corridor preserved, no centers in that area. So those are the three up in Weber County. This is 5600 West Transit. This is a project submitted by UTA, Utah Transit Authority. This is a replacement of the project that's currently in our regional transportation plan. That was a bus rapid transit project from 6200 South to 2700 South. Part of the Mountain View Corridor Record of Decision, or the Mountain View Corridor Environmental Study. It was a joint project with UDOT, UTA, all the local communities. And the way that that project, what came out of that project, environmental study, was UDOT builds this portion of the road, which they've been doing, Mountain View Corridor. UTA would do this portion of the transit, but they could do this portion of the freeway. UTA would then do this portion of the transit. It kind of went back and forth. This is an update to that, and we've been working very closely with UDOT, UTA, all the local communities along there. And I think this is a better project for the area. This is like a high frequency express route, stops every about every mile, extended hours of service. So it would be early morning, late night, higher frequency, like every 15 minutes. with the opportunity for this route to run on the shoulders. There's a significant part of 5600 West, and UDOT owns a portion of 5600 West, and then the local communities own the south portion of that. But there's significant portions of it where the buses could run on the shoulders if needed. Kind of leave that up to the driver as congestion gets worse, they could bypass. There would also be signal preemption or at the signal so the buses could get ahead of the traffic and stay on reliability and things like that. So this is a project where it needs to be amended into the regional transportation plan, and UDOT and UTA are currently working on the environmental study right now, but it needs to get into the plan prior to them submitting the final environmental study changes. It's about $35 million total, and that includes the project and the operation. Of that, it's about $6 or $7 million operating per year, which none of this funding has been found yet, but to update the environmental study to pursue the funding, we need to get into the plan. A little bit So this is a level three, because it's a bus rapid transit. So principal arterials or fixed guideway transit is that level three. Two minor incidents, bus accidents. So on the current existing flex route out there, it adds a little bit of delay. Oh wait, that is not a correct stat. That shouldn't be there. Anyways, that's from the other project. I was like, what the heck? How's this adding delay? All right, so error there in our presentation.
While you're on this delay measure, I don't understand exactly what it is you're computing. I know about vehicle hours of delay. These projects should reduce vehicle
hours. This is an incorrect one.
How about the first couple?
The first one was an addition to like a connection, so it's a new road.
So it should
reduce. So compared to zero right now, right, because the road's not there, you put in a new road, it'll add some kind of travel demand or delay.
I'm not sure you're computing.
We may need to look into that. But it was,
yeah, I think these road improvements should reduce vehicle hours of delay, not increase them.
I think that's one of the challenges with DHT in my mind, right, is it kind of aggregates the components of it, right? It could be because of new travel, because of growth in the area, right? It could be because of congestion in the area. VHT may go up. It could be because it induced demand in the area. And so VHT, in my mind, doesn't give you exactly what's happening underneath it.
Maybe this isn't the time to talk about it, but if you're looking at a corridor or a region as a whole, transportation improvements should, if they're good ones, produce VMT or VHT. So I think you're computing VHT only for that segment.
Yeah, that's what I was talking
about. And I'm not sure that's the right way to look at it.
Okay.
It should be broader.
When we run our travel demand model, it's on a regional basis. And so sometimes it's really hard to focus in on one project, or in some of the smaller project cases, we have to pull from an adjacent facility because that project may not be in our model itself. So,
George, can I suggest, will you, if Professor Ewing is willing, can you guys sit down with Professor Ewing and go over the specific details of the analysis and get his feedback? I know we've done this before, right, but on this, would you do that, please?
I would love to.
And I'd say the real benefit of this, right, this is the first time we're running through this process, so when you exercise a new process, you find weak links in the process or areas that need to be beefed up a little bit. So this is this is perfectly normal, okay. And I would expect.
Sure.
It would be good to work with you on that. There are some limitations to our regional model when you look at a project specifically, especially if it's a small piece. If it's not in the model, we have to pull from an adjacent road, which when you run a no build versus a build, then sometimes the numbers come out a little weird sometimes. So
thank you.
Big picture, I think the model works great and it does what it needs to do at a regional level. All right. This does support a boulevard community that's in our current plan. With connections to strategic clusters, so we have an economic development goal, and that is to connect to these existing clusters. So there's manufacturing, IT, software, finance, and aerospace out there. It does provide access to education and opportunity. We don't have any existing ridership, projected ridership for this project. As we've been working on the environmental study, is in the 2,000 to 3,000 riders. And again, I think that's a better reflects this current project now. For now, with the existing land uses, but as things change, the numbers could go up. It does serve vulnerable communities, and their quality analysis we've done for the level 3. This is a new 7200 West project from State Route 201 up to 700 North, so past I-80. Salt Lake County just had a request for proposals for consultants to do a study on this project. They've included UDOT, the railroad companies, the cities along there, Wasatch Front, in getting this study going. But we wanted to include it in the regional transportation plan for future funding proposal. This project.
Could you stop on that one?
Yeah.
So if the study hasn't been done yet, why would this be in the form of an amendment? Wouldn't we wait until we have these study results?
I think it's a good project. It connects to where the prison will be right here. But I think the study is going to address, is it 3 lanes needed? Is it 5 lanes needed? That's what the study, I think, is really going to address. I think there is a need out here. It's just, what is that the need going to be? Also, there's environmental impacts out here. There's a couple railroad lines that we need to work on in the study. And then the actual cost will come out of that study also.
This is actually a helpful point for clarification. Just because a project is in phase one of the plan does not mean that all the engineering work or the design has been done, nor does it mean that it is necessarily even funded. So once you get things into the first phase of the plan, then, well, you might, but I'm just going to make sure everybody else understands. So you have the first phase of the plan, and then you go into the programming process, more detailed analysis, and then looking at allocating specific funds once you get into more detail. So that's a helpful clarification.
And Helen and Carlton are here. Mayor McAdams, if you want to add anything, I'd open it up to.
We've actually hired the consultant at this point, and so we are proceeding to determine the cost, the engineering, all those pieces.
So this is an engineering study that's being done, a design study, not a feasibility study.
I'm probably going to call it the wrong thing, but it's an analysis to give us a cost estimate and also to give us the parameters of which the road would have to be designed to, so that both from a transportation standpoint, but also from a utility infrastructure standpoint, because the lines going into the new prison site go along this corridor. So for us to not know what that corridor is going to look like could put us in a position where we make some really poor decisions.
I would still think, and I'll drop it after this, but that if you're, for example, trying to figure out whether it's 3 or 5 lane, that would be something good to know as we vote on this amendment. I mean, that's, I think you got the order reversed a little bit.
I think we are putting it as a 3-lane facility with future right-of-way for 5. But I think if the study comes back and makes a recommendation to go to 5, we'll need to come back and update this amendment.
Fair enough.
I would say, I think that would be fair. All right, so safety index, I mean, it's a newer road. We use parallel facilities. It's low out there. Again, it's adding vehicle hours traveled because it's a new facility. So when you go from 0, you're adding new vehicles out there, right? I think that's the method. It's not delay, but it's just adding vehicle hours. It is connecting to the Northwest Quadrant and the facilities out there. There is corridor out there that's preserved. Just what exactly that alignment looks like. And it is connected to the job centers, the prison site, and the international center. And it's a level 2, so it's not required for air quality. There are these other two I'm going to go through kind of quickly. One's on 8000 West that goes from I-80, connects to the frontage roads, and then connects to the prison. So the prison will be right up in this area. The next project will go from the International Center and kind of weaves up. So for the prison, they need two access points. So that's for the next two projects. And again, this is a low safety index too. It connects to the Northwest Quadrant. We don't have it in our model right now. No additional vehicle hours traveled. The corridor is preserved out there. It's wide open. And it connects to the job center to the prison there. This is the other one that goes in. This is the second access that goes along 700 North, 7200 West, and then over. So the 7200 West project goes from here down. And so we're kind of starting that network connectivity out there on the Northwest Quadrant. Again, low safety index. This one is, we can pull from what we have on our model off of 5600 West. So it's a little bit added of vehicle hours. Connects to the quadrant. Right-of-way's there, and again, the corridor preservation, or the job center of the Northwest Quadrant. Wasatch Boulevard, this is a project that would be a phase two to phase one change. So it's currently in our plan. There is funding identified already for doing the northbound lane, but not the southbound lane. So we wanted to be consistent with the funding and move this in to phase one from phase two. Safety index is 4.5 out of the 10. Not much on added VHT. It does connect between the canyons down there and the 215. They've updated the environmental assessment on this project, so the project is ready to go. There is a town center, so Wasatch Choice 2050, there's a town center. The gravel pit in Cottonwood Heights there. Connects to existing IT software finance area in the Knutson corner area. So that's the access to opportunity. It does include existing bike routes and future enhanced bus. So it doesn't preclude any improvements there. Does not impact any vulnerable communities. And it does require quality conformity because it's a level 3 project. Last one is Redwood Road. This was a project to go change from phase 3 to phase 1, from 90th South to 126th. There's an existing funding project south of this from 126th to Bangor Highway in Riverton to go from 2 lanes to 7. And this would just be consistent. North of 90th South is already 6 lanes, so south of 126th is 6, and this is kind of the bottleneck of that. This was originally in Amendment 2 in May of 16. Since then, UDOT, UTA, WFRC, the counties and cities have looked at this all of Redwood Road. There's been 3 studies along this corridor, a West Side, Salt Lake County West Side Bicycle Study. So it looked at where's the right facilities for bikes in this area between, say, 1300 West and 2700 West. There was a Redwood Road travel demand study to find out what's the immediate need for Redwood Road improvements. And then there was a Redwood Road multimodal transportation study that was led by UTA, but again, had participation from all the communities along Redwood Road from Salt Lake City all the way down through South Jordan, I believe. UDOT participated on that, Wasatch Front did. And all these studies are now complete, and that's why I'm bringing that back to this committee to amend this plan. This project has a little bit higher safety index, 6 out of 10. So there's currently some issues, and hopefully with this project, we'll be able to address some of those. 3,100 hours of decrease in travel demand, so compared to a no build. So if we left it at the 4 lanes, adding these will help decrease that. It connects to the South Jordan Town Center. Along there, there's IT, software, finance, natural resources, energy clusters, so it connects to quite a few of the existing economic development clusters. Intermountain Home Care and Hospice, ATO, access to opportunities, so some of the job centers down there. The future Vision bike route, this doesn't preclude. Vision bike route is to have an above curb system. This project is just to restripe, so it's not going to build that bike system, but the local communities in the area want to have a wider sidewalk, wider multi-use path, and this project supports that, and the studies support that and recommend that. It does support a 1300 West bicycle route. UDOT Region 2 is planning on spending some of their transportation alternative program funds to work with the local communities and put the bicycle route on 1300 West, which is a half a mile to the west of Redwood Road. And in this area, our current vision plan is a core route system, so this project doesn't restrict the future transit projects that are being planned right now. It looks like, I don't know if there's, I wouldn't say there's an impact, but it does go through a vulnerable community area. It's restriping, so it's not like we're widening and removing homes or anything like that. It just ties to a vulnerable community. And it does require an air quality conformity since it's a level 3 request. It's this, again, $2 million project because it's restriping virtually. Jeff?
Could you just comment on the core routes and the transit? One of the things that UDOT and UT are working on right now is a connected vehicle. You've heard about connected and autonomous vehicles. Well, we're actually trying to do that with transit. And we've got a segment on Redwood Road where we actually have connectivity, wayside connectivity with the transit bus. We're able to tell if it's running behind schedule. And if it is running behind schedule, then we can adjust the traffic timing or the signal timing in order to get it back on schedule. And we see that advancing. We really do see a lot of promise in that, and I think it'll help the reliability and the travel time on transit and therefore increase ridership. So it's a pretty cool project.
There you go. There's the 9 projects. A little tedious going through step by step and giving more detail, but hopefully that's helpful when you're reviewing these projects. In the past, we would it would be very brief, something to the fact of, provides connectivity, provides access to jobs. What do you guys think, right? So we're hoping to provide additional details. It does take a little bit extra time to do that, but I know we're a little bit over time. So I believe there's a draft motion of Mayor, if you would be willing to entertain. What we're looking for is a recommendation to take this to the Regional Council next Tuesday.
So there is a suggested motion in your packet. Is there someone that would be willing to make that?
I move that we recommend to the Wasatch Front Regional Council that we approve amendment number 5 to the 2015-2040 RTP and the air quality conformity determination as found in the draft air quality memorandum 37. How's that?
Perfect. Wonderful. There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion and a second. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So that motion passed. Mayor McAdams, you joined us. Welcome. Anything you'd like to say to us? Or?
Well, sorry I missed all the meeting. I was actually looking forward to this meeting and especially the conversation about access to opportunity. And welcome to the new faces that are here today. And I probably have some more new faces joining us over in the next meeting. But I summoned up to meet with the Speaker and the Lieutenant Governor about homelessness. So I'm sorry that I was late. I hope to get out here soon. But it looks like it was a good meeting.
Well, thank you. We appreciate your efforts in that regard, by the way. Ted, you have just a couple of final things?
Yeah, you've got an item on the agenda that says RGC 2018 priorities. I'm just going to just boil this really down. Little primer, WFRC refers to the council that makes the final decisions, including adopting the plan, and in the case of what we just talked about, adopting the amendments to the plan. RGC, as we've talked about, is essentially the steering committee for changes to the transportation plan, including Wasatch Choice 2050. Within that light, we put together agendas that walk through the development of the plan and the Wasatch Choice 2050 and dig into long-range topic areas that interrelate land development, economic development, and transportation. Just wanted to give you that basic primer. I was going to go into that in more detail, but there is in your packet a table with some preliminary ideas of what we are looking ahead to provide in future meetings. And if you have some initial thoughts right now that you would like to share, that's great. But what I'd like to do, just for the sake of time, is to let you know that if you have some suggestions for future items that are kind of within the wheelhouse of the Regional Growth Committee, to please reach out to me, and I will share those with our chair and vice chair, and we can think about how we can address those kinds of topics over time. So is that acceptable, Mayor McAdams, or do you have anything you want to add to that? Okay. All right. So if there's not any comments or questions on that, I mean, I'm happy to take any, but that's all I wanted to just say, just for the sake of time today.
Okay. Thank you. I think that's anything else? Andrew had to leave.
Just a final reminder that next Tuesday, the 23rd, is the Wasatch Choice 2050 and Mayor's Metro Solutions joint event. One notable thing about that is the WFRC council meeting is right after that at 3 o'clock in the same location for your convenience. So we'd love to see you there. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Well then, thanks. All in favor? Anyway.